A great way to begin our service today at Prairie. And before we start, I just wanted to have a special welcome to all the fathers out in our audience today. Happy Father's Day. And thank you for coming to share part of your day at Prairie today. Well, welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Christina Clock, and I'm a member here. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or your inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourself so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, or by our minister. We are currently recruiting for a minister. Today, Bob and Dan will be presenting the program, and I'll look forward to introducing them right before their presentation. Well, it's my pleasure today to introduce two of our own Prairie members. I have to say this is one of the reasons that I am a member at Prairie, to hear presentations like this and to enjoy the stories of our own members and what they're doing in the community. Bob Park has been a member of Prairie for 38 years. Is that true, Bob? Okay. He's a past chair of Prairie Social Action Committee and is a retired Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources air pollution engineer. Dan Proud has been a member of Prairie for 10 years and serves on the Hospitality and Membership Committee and is a retired technical writer in the computer field. And we do have one small program change. Dan is going to accompany the last hymn on your guitar, Dan. So we'll look forward to that. So Dan and Bob are going to speak today on a topic called Putting Your Faith in Action. So welcome.
I'll go first.
Okay.
I'd like to start by saying that I put my faith in people, according to my experience with people, collectively and individually. I put my faith in reason and the scientific method, but not in religious teachings. I would not describe myself as a follower of a UU or any other faith, but my long connection with Prairie stems to a significant extent from finding others who share my social concerns here. I think UUs can be justly proud of their historical engagement in social concerns of the day, and that the young people in our congregation can learn from the example we set today. I'm going to talk briefly about civil rights, my activities in civil rights, peace, environmental protection, and media reform. And hopefully some of you have already seen the summary that I posted on the webpage. I won't repeat all of that. And during my part, if you've got questions as I go along, please feel free to ask them. My civil rights activities began in the 1960s. This was an era of segregation in the Deep South. And as I wrote my father, I joined the march on the last day of the March on Montgomery, which Martin Luther King had led. This was, the UUs were involved in that from early on, and you may know that James Reeb was injured on the first day of the march from Selma, and died 2 days later. He was the person who the James Reeb congregation is named after. He was one of three UU ministers that were attacked in Selma, and one of them was Orloff Miller, who contacted student campus groups such as the Channing Murray Club at the University of Wisconsin to encourage people to come and join in the last day of the March on Montgomery. And a lot of people came down from all around the country, and including a disproportionate representation of UUs. So I was involved in that, and I two of us went down as representatives of the Channing Murray Club. We were put up in homes of the members of the Birmingham Unitarian Universalist Congregation. We went through nonviolent training at that church, how to protect yourself if you were knocked down, that sort of thing. And let me go on to, that was in March of 65. Then the following summer, I went down to Mississippi as a volunteer for the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, and ended up getting arrested 3 days after I arrived as part of demonstrations that were going, were just starting. The voting rights, there were marches on the Capitol in Jackson, and the Jackson police had a policy of instant arrest for us demonstrators, and so more than 1,000 people ended up getting arrested over a series of a week or so. And I was in the first group, so I was incarcerated for 10 days with 400 and some people. I mentioned that the police had their numbers on their name tags taped over so they couldn't be identified. That showed up again as recently as the Occupy Wall Street in New York, where police had covered over their numbers until someone pointed out to a commanding officer that this wasn't legal, and got them to take the to reveal their numbers so they could be identified. Fortunately, we live in Madison where we don't have that kind of problem with the police, but in Mississippi in the 1960s, there was certainly a different kind of police force that we were up against. One example is during our 10 days, we were incarcerated at the exhibition halls on the state fairgrounds. Too many people put in jail. The only ones who went to the jail were the white women, the black men, and white men were in one of the exhibition halls, and the black women were another exhibition hall. We were fed two different kinds of canned vegetables and a piece of bread. It was our typical meal. When reporters were finally allowed in to interview us, that's when suddenly we got a piece of meat, a sandwich, or a piece of luncheon meat for our lunch. So that improved the meal when the reporters were there to see. An example of police attitude, there were black trustees who were in charge of preparing our meals, and one day a white officer grabbed the arm of a black trustee and made him dump a bunch of salt in the dish he was preparing, making it inedible for most of us for that meal. Although one person I recall said he was going to eat it anyway, and he had several portions of the very salty. When I was booked for this arrest, a trustee was looking at things in everybody's pockets. I had a little key case which had a fingernail device and a little blade on one side that I used for cutting out newspaper clippings, that sort of things. I could have gotten in trouble if he'd identified that as a knife and confiscated it, but he let it go, and that little blade served us well in making things like chess pieces that we made out of paper cups when we were entertaining ourselves in the exhibition hall where we were kept.
How long were you held
up? I was there for 10 days, and at that time everybody was bailed out. Someone at the national level came up with money to bail everybody out, and the arrests actually never went to trial. Eventually, we didn't have to go to trial. Eventually, the rule under which, the law under which we were arrested was declared unconstitutional because it was being used in an unconstitutional way. And at that point, it became easier to get a parade permit in Jackson, Mississippi than it was in Madison. While I was there, I visited the Unitarian Universalist Church in Jackson and was invited to dinner at the apartment of the Extension Minister, Donald Thompson. They were a small congregation that didn't really have enough income to support their own minister, but the UUA supported the minister that they had at that time because they were in such a crucial location. And Donald J. Thompson was there from 63 to 65, and he worked on inviting black members of the congregation and making it reportedly the first integrated congregation in Mississippi. And as I noted, after I returned to Madison, 2 weeks after returning, I learned that he had been shot in the parking lot of the apartment where he lived. Multiple small wounds from a shotgun blast. He recovered and was willing to stay on in Jackson until threats against members of the congregation started coming in. And this is a time of activity of the Ku Klux Klan still. And he did decide to leave at the later that year, and he went to Boston, where he worked in the Roxbury district. Later in 67, I went down to teach for a semester at Tougaloo College, a historically black college in the Jackson area, in Tougaloo. And actually, it's in the neighboring county of Jackson. And this is the license plate from that time, Mississippi. And Madison on the bottom is Madison County, yeah. Where Tougaloo is located. You were required to get a Mississippi license if you were working in the state. And even though I was there only one semester, I had to get a license, and it was more than $100 to register your vehicle. It was a major fundraising thing for the state. One of the things I remember from the teaching at Tougaloo was the basketball team at the school had gotten an invitation to play a white basketball team. This had never happened before. And the black players were nervous about engaging in a game against whites. So to give them some experience, the mostly white faculty at the school volunteered to have a game with them. So the white men and the black students played this basketball game, and it was pretty even for the first half until the black students got more familiar with the situation, and then they handily defeated the faculty. The biggest peace activities, I mentioned the Peacemakers Orientation Program in Nonviolence in 1970 in North Carolina, and the Peacemakers Group is the publisher of this newsletter. I've got a bunch of those if people are interested. And this center became the Friendship Center camp that's now in Wisconsin, and it was founded by Monroe Smith and his wife Isabel, two Quakers. And this has a story about Monroe's death in 1972. He was concerned about threats to firebomb the place, and he tried to get fire insurance, and nobody would insure the place. He even tried with Lloyd's of London, and they refused. So they ended up closing the facility there and moving to Wisconsin. And it's the Friendship Center in near Dodgeville in Wisconsin that has sometimes been used by our RE program for the summer spree. The biggest peace activity I was involved with, associated with Prairie, was the conference Building a Peaceful Tomorrow, an interfaith conference that occurred during just prior to the invasion of Iraq. And I had been involved with the starting of the Madison Area Peace Coalition, and two of us, a Quaker and I, were leading the discussion on having some sort of peace conference. I was very concerned that there seemed to be no moral compass as the Bush administration was heading towards war with Iraq, and a lack of vocal opposition on the part of religious groups. I felt there was a real need for some kind of organized religious opposition. So we organized this conference. It ended up being held at the Blessed Sacrament Church in Madison, involved quite a list of speakers with the Tammy Baldwin and someone from Voices in the Wilderness giving the concluding remarks. Prairie became the first congregation to vote to be a sponsor of that congregation. The Quaker meeting became the second congregation, and we ended up with 10 more religious groups in the Madison area sponsoring that conference. Environmental protection, I didn't mention in what I posted that I've been active on the green, I was on the green committee, and you can see the green square on the board back there now, that and we became a certified green sanctuary congregation, and there's a green page on our Prairie website where you can hear interviews with four of our members about their environmental practices. And finally, media reform. As many of you know, I'm involved with the low-power radio station, broadcasting from our garage as sort of a default location. Talita Shapru had volunteered her house as a better location for us to set up a tower, but we didn't get around to that before she died. If any of you did not see the article in Isthmus Magazine about our radio station, there's a copy of it here. It was posted on the bulletin board back late last year, but that's here for you to look at. And I should probably stop here and give Dan a chance to talk.
Okay. I wasn't sure what to say, so I just wrote something up last night, and I guess I feel more comfortable just reading it. So yesterday I was taking a walk in the morning when I passed a large chalkboard sign on a porch of a house on the main street of Bailey's Harbor in Door County, where Robin and I spent a few days with some friends. The sign quoted Rabindranath Tagore, a famous Bengali writer from a century ago, and the quotation said, "I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted, and behold, service was joy." And I walked down the sidewalk, and I thought, I want to read that again. So I went back, and I read it again. "I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted, and behold, service was joy." And I thought, this describes the life that I aspire to. I grew up in a family that went to church, and early on I accepted the golden rule as a lifelong value and commitment. And my parents embody that rule, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And for much of my life, I have gone from cause to cause, always in service of others. I found some paths to be more fulfilling or meaningful for me than other paths, and for some time I turned to look to see who I am, that I could be most joyful in my service. It has been very helpful for me to have discovered in recent years the distinctions of landmark education, an education that enabled me to be clear about who I am, or put another way, who I have created myself to be, and to accept myself and live my life with power and joy. I would dearly love to be a handy electrician or a plumber or a whiz at business or finance, but I'm really in my element as a musician. Also, I am passionate about community, and so I say that I am a stand for the health and well-being of communities and for the contribution of music to those communities. This is entirely compatible with several of the UU principles having to do with the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in relationships, acceptance of one another, the goal of community beyond boundaries, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence. Musicians need an audience because we need to engage people and share music. It's really about sharing our humanity through the special medium of music. These values of commitments of service through music and community have led me to continue to sing and play musical instruments, especially the guitar, in many settings and for many causes. A part of my story is that I was a Vietnam War era veteran, drafted and trained as a medic, spared from combat but sent away to live in army barracks in Germany at the age of 22. To be sure, there were fun times to be had there in Germany, but I was there against my will. And if you've been in the military as a draftee or drafted for anything against your will, maybe teenagers can relate to this in their family life when they're told what to do, whether they like it or not. There's a lot of room for resentment and boredom and humiliation and anger. And you just have to suck it up. That is, suppress your feelings or you suffer the consequences. Years later, I read about veterans returning from the far, far off war in the Middle East and returning to a complacent and disinterested society back home. And I was taken back to my own time when my friends didn't care to hear about what I had to go through. If you haven't done military service, it's hard to appreciate what it's like. And veterans who went through combat often have pressing needs that don't get met or even get recognized. I just read in that the AP reported that this year more active duty U.S. troops have committed suicide than were killed in action in Afghanistan, about one suicide a day. So I really wanted to be of service in some way to these veterans and their families. The music that I wrote in the barracks in Nellingen, Germany still seemed appropriate to the present situation. And I dusted off the songs a couple years ago and put together some friends and musicians. And I notably among them, Delita Chaprue and Judy Wacker. And I produced a CD to raise some music for the vets. And then I found the perfect organization to support, Guitars for Vets, in the cause of restoring the feelings of joy and purpose that can be lost after suffering trauma, as it states on the organization's website. And I also became a Guitars for Vets instructor, and I now give guitar lessons to vets at the Vet Center in Willie Street a couple of times a week. The vets have been very appreciative for the lessons, and when they stick with the program for 10 lessons, they receive a guitar to keep. So I play and teach guitar and sing at Prairie and at Guitars for Vets. I sing in the Choral Arts Society Chorale and the Madison Manor Corps and the Cambrian Singers at Welsh festivals and at the occasional protest or workshop or party wherever music is called for. I also have played for my second and third grade class at Crestwood Elementary School in Madison, where I tutor. Kids give me a kick because of their energy and openness to the wonder of life. I am constantly aware of their place in the world as our future leaders and decision makers. They are the inheritors of the world we leave them and the fashioners of the world they in turn will leave for the next generations. So I've committed myself to Crestwood, the school in my neighborhood, and for the last 2 years, I've spent parts of two mornings a week listening to them read to me and reading to them and sharing myself. Here at Prairie, I've taught RE classes and will teach here again in the future. It is a really important part of our community, and I want to salute Rebecca and my wife Robin and Susan and all the teachers who dedicate themselves to the lives of the kids in our midst. I also serve on the Hospitality Membership Committee and the Program Committee, two committees that give me a great deal of pleasure and are important in sustaining our congregation. So to summarize, I'm committed to the communities in my life, my extended family, my Welsh American network of friends, to the Prairie community, to veterans, to my landmark friends, and to my lifelong college friends, and so on and so on. The life of service is a joy if it is an authentic expression of who we are. As a veteran, a Unitarian Universalist, a musician, and as someone who cares about kids, as long as I can serve and be outward looking, I will be happy.
Dan, can I ask you a question about singing?
Sure.
As I recall, you and Mary Mullen and someone else were formed a trio that performed at,
yeah.
Was at the Earth Charter Summit?
Roz Woodward, yeah.
Roz Woodward at the Earth Charter Summit.
Yeah.
Or was that the occasion? I was trying to remember.
That was one of the places that we sang, yeah.
Uh-huh. What did you call your group? The Peacemongers?
The Peacemongers.
I remember the demonstrations. I lived at the Friends Campus Center on campus for a while, and that was one of the buildings where tear gas was fired by police into the basement of the building. Jeez. To get after demonstrators who were trying to escape from the tear gassing. There were a lot of people involved on campus in the demonstrations, and I was involved in some of the demonstration planning, and one of the quotes I had was how the faculty had voted against the war in Vietnam by an overwhelming majority, and had even voted to suspend classes for a week to accommodate the student activism and the teach-ins and that sort of thing. Before coming to Madison to start graduate work in 1961, I came from a Methodist background, but had reservations about that background, and got involved with the Unitarian Student Group. Actually, I was first involved with the Wesley Foundation and a group, Methodist group, the first year I was in Madison. But then I got involved with the Channing Murray Club, ended up as president of the Channing Murray Club, and I remember how disappointed my father was in hearing that I had what he called decided to follow this shallow humanist Unitarianism instead of prayerfully searching my way through a relationship of Christ and that sort of thing. But he always taught us to think for ourselves, and he never criticized my choice after that again.
Well, that's the organization. They have fundraising activities. Yeah, and they have a special relationship. I can't remember the name of the company that makes the guitars, but they're all made, you know, in the Midwest by a minor guitar maker. They're all new, yeah.
Well, I think part of the situation in the 60s was that it was such an obvious injustice that we had segregation, laws against integration, segregated lunch counters, laws against interracial marriage, all that sort of thing. And it really caught the attention of the young people on campuses. And some people went to the Deep South and devoted a major part of their lives working for social civil rights in the South. Of course, every college generation goes beyond college and another generation comes along. And I'm sure there have been some changes in attitudes as the issues changed as well. One of the issues that came up after the civil rights was a big issue was the war in Vietnam. And even in the Deep South, there were students concerned about that. And the students at Tougaloo College were among those who were concerned and were prepared to go into Jackson and join a demonstration against the war in Vietnam in 1967, until the Ku Klux Klan threatened violence and they had to cancel their plans. I know on this campus, after the bombing of Sterling Hall killed the researcher in the basement, it really killed the anti-war movement for some time because people couldn't support that. It had gone to that point, but there were always those who were frustrated at the lack of progress in opposing the war in Vietnam and wanted to move towards more and more radical steps, thinking that those would be more effective, but the opposite was true when we got to killing somebody, accidentally as it was, but so more issues came along later. Can I respond just briefly to what Bob said, that he points out the need for media reform? We've had a consolidation of media into corporate control and less local control, and things like low-power radio stations and the internet and website and so on can provide a path back towards more locally controlled media that's more relevant.
I'd also like to add that back in the 60s and 70s, there was a lot more, the musical scene was more integrated, I guess is the way I think of it, and less fragmented, so that there were fewer, you know, like record labels and you know, people who became popular were heard by more people, and a lot, and some of the record companies like Elektra actually had, you know, wanted to showcase protest singers. We just watched a video of Phil Oakes the other day. So you heard, you know, protest songs on the airwaves from time to time, and big names would turn up at some of these events. You know, Peter, Paul, and Mary sang Blowing in the Wind at the 1963 civil rights protest in Washington.
On the question of how to get involved, my response is first, you can join the Social Action Committee. Molly Plunkett is going to be chairing that. And the Social Action Committee has a social action calendar of events on its website with coming events in the Madison area. There are all kinds of things you can get involved with by going to meetings and learning about the groups that are putting them on. And here's a folder full of past announcements of social action events in the Madison area that you can look at later.
Yeah, I would just say that in this world, it's very easy to get involved. I mean, just get on the internet and do a search and, you know, find out what organizations are active in your area and contact them. I mean, as far as schools go, they're, you know, they have volunteer coordinators, so you just call the school and they'll put you in touch with the person. So there's really, you know, it's very easy. If just the hard thing, I think, is choosing which one you want to put your time into.
Bob didn't mention it, but Bob is the coordinator of the Humanist Union that meets here at Prairie and is comprised of many Prairie people, but also people from the wider community. And although it's not really action-oriented, it's more talk-oriented, it helps get your mind straight about certain topics that might be relevant to social volunteering. So I want to thank Bob for that. And Dan, I had the pleasure of taking guitar lessons from Dan. And not only are you a great guitar player, but you have something that I'll never have, and that's patience. So thank you both very much for a great presentation. Our closing words today are by Beth Casebolt. As you leave this place, take with you a sense of joy from the gifts we've been honored with, a sense of appreciation for the work of others we benefit from, a sense of commitment to the strengthening of our church, a sense of love from those who support us in this community, a sense of awe for what we can accomplish when we work together in our faith. Thank you for coming on this wonderful Father's Day morning. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you and stay and join us for some coffee and conversation.